Welcome to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best leaders they can be in any endeavor they choose. Patty Grimm is our host and interviews top women in a variety of fields to help women grow, learn, and lean in together. Patty has over 25 years of experience in primarily male-dominated fields in senior-level management positions. Patty is the owner of Advantage Training Limited, an organizational leadership team training company. She recently released her new book for women called Quiet Women Never Changed History. Be strong, stand out, and stand up. With the subtitle, Let's Go Kick Some Glass.
And that's exactly what we're going to do this morning. Welcome, Patty.
Hey, thanks. And we have an absolutely beautiful day here in Southern California at Orange County Talk Radio. And we have an absolutely awesome guest. Judy Clement Wall is incredible. In fact, I have her book in front of me, which I will reference quite a bit because it's such a great book. She's an illustrator teacher in San Francisco Bay Area. She's author and illustrator of the Creative Self-Love Journal, Find Your Awesomeness, or Find Your Awesome, a 30-day challenge to fall in love with your playful, imaginative, and colorful self. I love this book. It is amazing. You can find it on Amazon a number of different places. But she's also very creative in that she's been involved in the Inkspiration, which is kind of hard to say. So Inkspiration series, including Marcy Smirnoff's Inkspiration for Women and Jack Canfield's The Power of Positive Inking. She is an artist, and her art can be found everywhere from wine labels to lampshades to book covers to greeting cards. And she's published her journals in a variety of places like Huffington Post, Mind Body Green, BeliefNet, and Rumpus. So we're going to talk with Judy about her book and about her experiences. But I love this book. Every chapter is a 30-day chapter on things you can do to love yourself, make your life better, be more playful, be more imaginative, and more colorful. And I think we all need that in today's kind of challenging world. I'll just leave it at that. So welcome, Judy. How are you?
Hi, Patty. I'm great. Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, so awesome to have awesome. I'm going to use the word awesome probably 100 times on the show today about finding your awesomeness and all those kinds of things. So tell us about your background and how you got into this. I mean, you had a technology background like me, and uh-huh. You're now illustrating books and inkspiration. So tell us, how did you get to where you are today?
Well, it was very circuitous, not unlike you, I guess. I worked at Intel for a long time as a data analyst, and after my second child was born, doing that commute, it was probably about a 3-hour commute to and from work and dropping my kids off at daycare, and I decided I think I need to do something different than this. So I went back to school originally thinking that I would be a programmer, which was like the next step from being a data analyst. But I took my first creative writing class, college-level creative writing class, and changed majors and sort of never looked back. And after I got my degree, I cobbled together some freelance writing gigs, revenue streams, doing kind of, you know, boring work like editing websites. And I did do some writing jobs, but as you probably know, a lot of the writing that you can do, especially for the internet, doesn't wind up paying at all, or sometimes just doesn't pay well. So I was not quite the literary success that I was hoping to be, and I started drawing. I mean, I joke that I started drawing because I wasn't the literary success that I'd hoped, but I started drawing partly because, you know, when you get a degree, like I did in creative writing, you read voraciously like I always have, and I've always written even as a child, I have all these ideas about what writing needs to look like. But when I started drawing, I had never drawn, I didn't draw as a kid, I had no preconceptions of what good art needed to look like. I was so happy somebody recognized, it's a cat, yay. And so it was a lot more fun. I found that I did it. Not that I didn't have fun writing, but I have a love-hate thing with my writing. And it was just love with the art. I just did it, and I sent these funny little postcards to my friends, and I posted online and with my various online venues. And people were very supportive. And, you know, in 2013, I opened an Etsy shop. It doesn't cost anything to open a shop, and it only costs 20 cents to list an item. And I thought, what have I got to lose? We'll see if people like it. Enough to actually buy my art.
Right. Right. Well, and it's interesting because, you know, when people think of art, they think of, you know, like things that are in museums. Your art is very colorful. It's very imaginative. It's something people can identify with. And I like in the very beginning of your book, you say there are no rules, right? That this is absolutely positively doesn't have to be completed in 30 days. In fact, almost all activities can easily be sketched out in a day if you wanted to. And so the whole idea is finding your soul and finding your awesomeness. And so you really made a real switch because you went from this total head data analyst thinking you were going to become a programmer to art and expression and the popular trend right now of coloring books.
Yeah, I lucked into the trend of coloring books, and that was because the publisher of those coloring books, HCI Books, my editor there found me online. In fact, later we were talking about it and she couldn't even remember which place she'd found me, but I was posting everywhere. I have a blog and a website, so I was certainly posting there. But on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, I was posting all the art that I was doing. And I had decided myself prior to that contact to try my hand at a coloring book because I could see that coloring books were big. And I thought, you know, I haven't committed myself to an art project that was long and required me to sit down every day and draw. And, you know, I would self-publish that, so I also had to find a printer and, you know, kind of calculate what's my break-even point and all of that. And I published my own coloring book, and it was sometime just after that. I mean, I published in September of that year, and by October I was already talking to HCI about doing coloring books for them. So it was really quick. But I do think, like, the Internet is, despite all the problems that we all know there are with the Internet, it's also a huge gatekeeper breakthrough where we can all get our work out to the people who most want to see it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm literally looking through the book, and I was telling you before we got on the air that I've got, you know, when I go through an actual physical book, I go through and you know, turn the corners down on certain pages, and I bet you I have about half of the book turned down because it's so amazingly, you know, think about the things that you're grateful for and having a gratitude journal of saying, I'm grateful for this, and just even simply saying thank you to people.
Yeah.
I'm surprised sometimes when I'm at a shop or a restaurant or even a store or anything I'm doing volunteering, and I just simply say thank you, and people kind of look surprised, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, we need to be a lot more grateful in this world.
Yeah.
So, you know, what made you decide to center your business around your art?
I think that it was a combination of things. I don't know that I don't know when it was that I decided, oh, this is a business. I think probably somewhere in the coloring book publications that I decided, I think I actually do have a business here. but it was a very gradual thing of trying things. Like, you know, we're back to that playfulness. But because I didn't have so many expectations about what a career with art or what art itself had to look like I did with my writing. I sort of think of it like I was just throwing spaghetti against the wall. I was trying new things, finding out what I could do and what I was, what my abilities and skill sets were at the same time that I was seeing what people wanted to buy. And, you know, and then suddenly I had an art business.
Yeah, exactly. So how did finding your awesomeness come to be? I mean, what sort of inspired this awesome? I'm going to say it again. Find Your Awesome, a 30-day challenge to falling in love with your playful, imaginative, and colorful self. I think men, women, children need to do this, because I was at an event recently when somebody said she was talking to a group of young girls and said, tell me one thing you like about yourself. And they had nothing to say.
Oh, I know. That's so heartbreaking.
Doesn't that break
really
as a mother? It just kills me.
Yeah. And that's exactly where this came from, because in 2011, for a myriad of reasons, I publicly on my blog committed to living 2012 fearless. I called it my year of fearless love. And every month I would assign myself a challenge, and I blogged about it. So gradually over the course of that year, more and more people joined in and did the challenges with me. And it was an amazing experience. But one of the months was self-love. And I did various things like gratitude. I wrote letters, love letters to people. And I wrote a love letter to myself. And I made time for myself, and I carved out there was a week where we had to carve out, and it wasn't much that I was asking, 15 minutes each day that I was asking to dedicate entirely to yourself. And all of these people who joined with me over the course of that year, who were inspiring me with how great they were at putting love out in the world, suddenly I asked them to turn that same kind of attention on themselves, and it was the same thing that you're talking about. Like they would write me letters, these heartbreaking letters. One woman wrote to me and said, I sat down to write myself a love letter, and then the rest of her email were all the reasons to me, telling me why she didn't deserve a love letter from herself. And I just thought, this is insane.
This is tragic.
Yeah, it's tragic. Exactly. And we're not taught, you know, in our society, we're just not taught that this is a valuable thing. We're taught to put ourselves last. So at the end of that project, I wrote a little, and that was maybe my first adventure in doodling, because I did do some little doodles on the pages, but I wrote a little ebook that was called 52 Weeks, 52 Ways to Love Yourself, intending for people to do it over a year. And I just offered it for free to all my blog subscribers. But when I was doing these coloring books with HCI Books, my editor and I got in a conversation about that year, and I told her about that book, and she asked if I would send it to her. And so that book became the basis for Find Your Awesome.
Yeah, and there's so much in what you just said. I want to highlight a couple of things. I mean, I had hired at one time when I worked for a big bank, I'd hired this motivational speaker to come in and speak at a women's conference, and her name was Bobby Gee, G-E-E. I'm not even sure she's still alive because she was a bit older way back then. And one of the things she said that struck with me so much, and I have it in all of my books and all of my writings and everything I do, about you cannot give away what you do not own. So you can't give away love if you don't love yourself.
Oh, yeah, that's beautiful.
And just like you, if you're on the airlines and they say put on your oxygen mask first before you can put on the mask mm-hmm. of the child or the person next to you, because you can't breathe if you don't have oxygen and save that other person. You can't help your children grow up and be strong and confident if you don't have some of that self-love yourself. And so I just think about how crazy the world is. And one of the little facts in your book, it's on Put Yourself on a T-Shirt page. On page 25, it says, fact, there can never be too many badass, open-hearted, hippie warriors of love in the world. And I tell you, I've got this thing, and I love the idea of the 52 weeks and 52 ways to love yourself, but it's such a cool book. So why do people need to read this book right now?
Well, I think you and I are hitting on it totally. I'm going to start using that too, that you can't give away what you don't own, because I think that's at the heart of it, right? We can tell ourselves that putting ourselves last makes us, you know, not only can we tell ourselves, the rest of the world is going to tell us that they understand why we're tired and why we've run ourselves ragged, as long as the ways that we're doing that is, you know, because we're great caregivers or because we're super busy. I mean, our culture celebrates busyness.
Exactly.
The less white you have on your calendar, the more we understand and respect what you do. But the problem with that, as you're pointing out, is that your reserves are all gone. And how do you keep giving to the world? I don't know if I actually put it in this book, but at the time that I was doing the self-love portion of the Fearless Love Year, I said that selfless love, just think about what that even means. Selfless, like you are not actually, you have nothing left of yourself to give if you've run yourself that ragged. And I think it's so important that we learn to celebrate ourselves, to nurture ourselves, to play. I mean, that's one of the things that I did with Find Your Awesome, was I wanted to make it really playful. I wanted to be, you know, I think sometimes people shy away from self-care because they're thinking, you know, day spas, or they're thinking like I have to meditate and find my connection with the universe, or whatever big kind of, you know, nebulous sort of idea they've got around self-love, when in actuality, it can be a small daily practice. It can be a little thing that you do every day, a little bit of time that you donate to yourself every day. And I just, having done it now for 2 years of making sure that I make time for myself, I can say that the benefits that you get from that are just like you can't even begin to imagine how many things are affected.
Yeah, yeah, and I can be the walking testimonial of somebody that went from being a rock star to being at rock bottom. literally, I mean, from having an amazing career at Microsoft, and I say I was there 15 years, but I had 14 amazing years and 1 year of pure hell. and that pure hell year was when I literally hit rock bottom to a point where a doctor told me if I didn't take either a sabbatical or medical leave of absence, I was going to die in 6 months.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I was at rock bottom, and that was 2012 or 2010. I can't even remember now. It seems like it's so long ago.
Yeah.
And that I just allowed, and what happened, I allowed that to happen to myself. I didn't blame anybody. I did it to myself because I lost sense of who I was, what I stood for, my family, my vision, my values, my spirituality. I allowed other people to define me instead of defining myself, and I lost myself in the process. But so many of your exercises are so impactful, and I think everybody in this audience can give 15 minutes a day to yourself. And when I was going through kind of trying to pick myself up again and find my big girl panties and, you know, get up again and get back out there in the world stronger than ever, you know, I was trying to do these things where people said, well, write a full page every day. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
And I tried. And now I'm down to every day I've got a small little journal, and every day I write one sentence. I write one sentence of positivity or awesomeness or something I'm thinking about that day. And use that as my, you know, the one thing, sort of like your book, you know, write yourself a personal manifesto. Learn to love doing nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking at the sky, walking with your dog on the ocean, or whatever brings you joy, you know, find those kind of things that you really need in this world. It's crazy.
It is. And then when you find those things, be mindful, you know, notice that you're doing it. I think a lot of times, like when you were talking about how people would notice when you said thank you. How, you know, all of a sudden it is two human beings talking to each other, where before it was just this transaction that was happening. Then you say thank you, and suddenly both humans have now recognized that they're part of this. I think that it's just, we let so much of our lives get by us because our minds are somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and so many of your tips I love so much. So let's talk about writing your personal manifesto. Let's give the audience a couple of real specifics here. And I've got the book right in front of me.
Okay.
So how do you write your personal manifesto?
Well, there's a ton of ways to go about that, but the way that I think of it is that what I did was I wrote down, what are my values? What are the things that I think are most important? So, creativity, being creative, being fearless, being loving, and having the people I love close to me in my life, and, you know, my own personal little posse. And I wrote all those things down on a list, and then for the manifesto, I just made it a little more artful, put it on a piece of paper. It wouldn't matter how you did this, though. You could do it as a list if you're not feeling very arty. And what it is it just, and in a personal manifesto, then you instead of saying, be creative, well, actually, you could say be creative. Instead of saying, I want to be creative, you're sort of phrasing and thinking about a manifesto to state the life as you want it to be. So it's, you know, instead of I want to be more creative, it's be creative. It's find the very positive, very sure statement of how you envision your life being in a series of value statements, essentially, is what it winds up being. It's amazing. They've done studies before where they'll have students write down their values before they take a test. And then other students who just took the test, and the ones who wrote down their values first did better in the test. It sort of focuses you on what matters to you. And that's what I mean. This self-love stuff. it affects things in ways that you don't even foresee being affected. So, you know, you wouldn't necessarily think that people would do better on a test, but it's because their head's in a good place and they're very clear on who they are and what they value. And it makes you feel stronger in those values. That sentence that you're writing every day, Patty,
right?
It focuses your mind on what matters to you that day, where you're going to focus your attention.
Yeah, yeah. And here's another one. This is day 7. Call Blue. You know, I'm going to say this on the air. Hopefully, Paul doesn't freak out. But because last week, instead of saying women kicking glass, I said women kicking ass. But anyway,
you don't have to point these things out, Patty.
But anyway, so I think this is a real challenge for most women. And one of my friends said that, you know, guilt is the gift that keeps giving that our mothers gave us. You know, but day seven is called bullshit on shoulds. So what are the shoulds that we should think about and get rid of? I should do this. I should be thinner. I should be taller. I should have better hair. I should do, you know, should. So what are
you should not say four-letter words on the air here.
That's George Carlin. That's over. Yeah, so what are some of the shoulds that we should maybe we should think
well,
about getting rid of?
This particular one, because I do think we do too many things simply because we should. And I think any time that your reason for doing something is because I should, then you need to relook at it. And I'm very careful to say that not everything that we do because we should is something that we can just stop doing. You know, I should pay bills, and I don't get to just say, oh, I don't want to, because I should. But even on those things that you have to do because you have to, and you can't get out of it, and your life is structured in a way, because that could be anything. It could even be like caregiving or anything that you're tired and you're just burnt out and you have to work and you have to pay your bills. And I'm thinking, what I mean, one of the things that I mean, besides just stopping doing things that you can stop doing because you should, I also mean reframing the things that you can't get out of doing. So instead of thinking that, I have to work out, instead of thinking of it like that, or I should work out, I have to work out because I should work out, thinking instead about, like, this makes me a healthier person. This makes me, when I work out, I'm able to then, you know, have more energy and mm-hmm. be healthier and therefore be more present. All of the ways that you can reframe a should into something, into all the reasons that it is a should, if it's a valid thing to do. But then there is a whole host of things that we think we should do. That if you just simply stopped doing them, the world would not come to an end and no one would think less of you. And it's, you know, I realized at some point that the world doesn't expect me to have a spotless house. I expected me to have a spotless house.
That's not happening in my house.
Well, it's not happening here anymore, but it was extremely freeing for me to realize that was a burden I put on myself. And there's a lot of those.
Yeah, and I think a lot of women got caught up in the Cinderella syndrome and, yeah. You know, thinking about the fact that Cinderella is a fairy tale.
Yeah.
You know, Wonder Woman, as popular as the movie Wonder Woman was, is a movie, mm-hmm. and all these people were created by somebody that shoulds. I should be a great mom. I should be a great, you know, manager, leader. I should be a great daughter. I should be this. I should be that. And because of what I went through, I now am more conscious of things, of saying, do I want to do this or should I do this? And I'll use a very specific example. I was at a women's event yesterday that was fabulous. A friend of mine spoke there, and I was there to support her, but I was also there to recruit and help women get into NABO, National Association of Women Business Owners. It was a great day, and at the end, there was another event I was invited to by a friend of mine that I kept thinking, I should go. I should really go to this event. And I sat there around 4 o'clock and said, you know what? I'm not going to go. You know, I could have gone. I could have been there. Might have been nice. Might have been fun. But I needed to go home and rejuvenate myself. I needed to take care of myself. That was a should that I said I should go. But I decided tonight, this one event, I wasn't going to go to because I knew if I did, it would put me sort of one step over the line where I'd be exhausted today.
Yeah.
So you just sort of learn to balance those kinds of things. So, you know, one of the things I like is there's a great graphic on page 95, and this is something I want to encourage everybody to do, you know, man, woman, child, whoever, about make a list of things not to do. And what I like is there's a little circle, so you can draw yourself a piece of a circle on a page and say, how do I spend my time? You know, and how much time, you know, doing, you know, the graphic that you show has got a very, very little teeny slice of a pie that says doing what fills me up. A bigger portion of the pie is, you know, binge watching on TV or checking social media, doing Facebook, those kinds of things. And then the half of the pie is feeling guilty about doing or watching these things like doing social media that might fill you up. You know, being on Facebook could fill you up because you're connected with your friends. But I like the idea of this idea of, you know, how are you spending your time?
Oh, my gosh, a time journal. I did this one. This was years ago. That somebody had suggested that we keep a time journal where you're actually noting how much time you spend doing different things. And it's probably a way of surviving that, you know, humans have developed. But we, I think, habitually underestimate the amount of time we spend wasting time or doing things that are not aligned with our values. And and then overestimating the time we spend doing things that we say are aligned to our values. So if you say, you know, back to that personal manifesto when you're writing down what's valuable to you, when you take a look at how you're actually spending your time and whether or not the things that you're doing are aligned with your values, it's amazing how often it isn't. And I'm not saying that there shouldn't be goofy time where you're just surfing the internet. I think everybody needs time off.
Yeah, we need that mental break of watching cat or dog. For me, it's pug. I have two pugs. I have a 7-month-old pug who is just a Tasmanian devil in the worst case of 2-year-olds I've ever seen any dog child or anything. And then I have a 10-year-old pug, Roxy. And so my time watching pug videos or walking my dogs is what I put in my generation, my regeneration, something that fills me up.
Yes, absolutely. And you don't need to, that's a thing that I go back to again and again and find you're awesome. You don't have to justify that. You know, no one else gets to say what fills you up. And so, you know, frankly, I'd like to watch your pug too. And I don't think that there's anything for us to feel apologetic for. If what fills you up in any given moment is, you know, really, I just want to look at cat videos. I think it's perfectly fine to look at cat videos.
You know what I like is I like your thing about your not to-do list. And here's a couple of tips for people. One is I won't leave Facebook on in the background while I work, so you're not distracted. My thing was when I worked at Microsoft, I would get between 800 and 1,000 emails a day. Right. And so I had to learn to time block my time, is that I was going to check email in the morning for about an hour to an hour and a half, again in the afternoon, and then shut it off so it's not constantly pinging you when you're on your computer, you're doing something. I won't subscribe to something new without subscribing, getting rid of something old. I won't say yes to people who undervalue me or project that feeling more draining than exciting. I won't let perfect get in the way of done, and I won't leave my workout to the end of the day. And so I ask the audience, we're going to take a quick commercial break and then come back, but I'm going to ask the audience to think about what would they put on their, how they spend their time list, and what would they put on their not-to-do list. And so, Judy, just give us one more time the title of the book and your website where people can find you or get the book, and then we'll come back from commercial break, and we'll keep talking because this has been fabulous.
Okay. The book is Find Your Awesome, and my website is judyclementwall.com.
Awesome. Thank you.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When it comes to pioneers in their respective industries, we all know the Apples, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of the world. In the realm of recruiting, Decision Toolbox is the industry's best-kept secret. With 90% of their business from referrals and repeat customers, for over 20 years, Decision Toolbox's U.S.-based team of recruiters, sourcers, professional writers, quality personnel, and tech support has perfected a Six Sigma approach to talent management. No matter the size of the project, Decision Toolbox delivers incredible results. A cost per hire less than half of what contingency firms charge. With the winning candidate presented in an average of 14 days. All with a 12-month candidate warranty. With results like that, Decision Toolbox won't be a secret for long. Visit us at www.dtoolbox.com for more information.
All right, we're back with Patty. Before you jump in again, I got to tell you, that is the most clever title I've ever heard. Your not-to-do list. I think you should write a book, and it should be page by page. People have all these lists. It's the year. Don't do this. Don't do that. You don't need to do this. I think that is the coolest idea. Not-to-do list.
Get rid of all the shit.
I'm going to throw out all the to-do lists, and I'm going to start making not-to-do lists here and putting them up all over the place.
Okay, so, Paul, what can't be on your not-to-do list is to clean up the office and get your car door fixed because you can't even get into your driver's seat because your car's broken.
It's been a couple of years. I'll get around to it one of these days.
I went down around to Paul's car one time to find something in the trunk, and I opened it and went, oh my, there were like six vacuum cleaners in there. Portable, what do you need six portable vacuums for?
It was on my not-to-do list to take those out, so I'm practicing what I preach right now.
I said, someday I'm going to get your keys. I'm going to go down and dump everything in your car and see what you do.
Just steal it, please. Just steal the car.
Anyway, so this is Patty Grimm with Judy Clement Wall. And, you know, one of the things I'm thinking about as I'm looking at your book and thinking about the world today, I mean, I don't talk about politics, so we're not going to talk about politics, but is this a good time to be a creative entrepreneur for women?
Yeah, I think it is, because I think going back to the internet and the opportunities that are there, I think historically there have been so many gatekeepers. So I actually know more about the writing gatekeepers because that's where I come from mostly. And, you know, there's agents and there are editors that you have to get through you have to get through them first before you can even get a publisher to look at you.
Yeah.
And nowadays there are so many platforms for self-publishing. There are social networks that you can build, communities that are supportive of you and your work. There are podcasts and venues like this one, your radio show, that allow people to reach the end user, that allow people to reach their audience in ways that they never could before because there were too many people between them and the people that would appreciate their art. So I think that probably the bigger problem now is getting heard above the general noise, because there's so much out there on the internet.
Right.
But I'd rather deal with that than deal with that I can't even get to the people who might want to see my art. And I do think that that's just opened up a ton of possibilities for creative entrepreneurs and women creative entrepreneurs that never existed before.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, there's so many ways that you can be creative. In fact, I love this one, which is day 8. Be openly magnificent. Instead of trying to fit in, instead of making yourself small so that others feel big, instead of being quiet and polite and perfectly acceptable, which sometimes women are told be perfectly acceptable, be openly magnificent today.
Yeah.
So how can our listeners be openly magnificent today?
I think that, you know, history, and I am actually a great example of this, that I grew up somehow under the impression that we needed to be quiet, and my natural instinct is to never want to make anyone else feel uncomfortable or small, and so I make myself smaller, and I do think that that is chronic with women. So my advice is to speak up. And don't be afraid to be the person who has not only a statement or an opinion. That's great. But I think sometimes women are even afraid to ask questions. They're even afraid to just let their voice be part of the conversation. And I think that we just have to be brave and do that. And, you know, not to get too much about the internets, but it is a hard... That's another thing that's bad about the internet, is that it's hard to be a woman on the internet. It's hard to be a woman with a voice or an opinion on anything because they're so, I think, brutally attacked. But we have to be brave, and we have to do it anyway. And what I'm finding is that more often than not, the reception to my using my voice or my using my art openly and, you know, quote unquote magnificently, my attempt at magnificence, it's met with cheers. It's met with warmth and support. And, you know, every once in a while you get a critic, but overall, I think that women would be surprised at how much support there is out there.
Yeah, and there's so many amazing groups of women helping women supporting women, and at all levels in all areas of the world. And I love the fact that one of the things you talk about is, you know, live your life like you mean it. You know, then do it tomorrow and do it again and do it again. So it's
yeah.
You know, it's just consistency of being able to do that. And I'm one of the things in my book, I was talking about how women need to be visible, valuable, and vocal. And so find something you're really good at doing, like yours is creative and art and doing these beautiful drawings that you do, and find something you're magnificent at and focus on that, and then be visible and be vocal about what you do. Men have no problem doing this, right? So a guy does a project that's maybe, you know, less than perfect. I'll just say that. I had a different word I was going to use, but I promised not to use swear words for the rest of the day, at least with Paul. But, you know, that men do something that's less than perfect, and they pat themselves on the back, and they high-five of what a great job they did, and they tell everybody. A woman does a magnificent job of something. She does a project or creates something that's magnificent. And somebody says, oh, my goodness, Judy, that's fantastic. What do most women say?
Oh, it was nothing, and it's not that great, and yeah.
My team did it, or people,
that's right.
People give you a compliment and say, your hair looks great today, or I love that outfit. And most women take away, the person is just giving you a gift, right? They've mm-hmm. given you a gift of a compliment, and you take it away by saying, oh, this old thing, or oh, I need to get my hair colored. You know, so yeah. We have to stop doing that. We have to celebrate our magnificentness and being able to stand up and say, this is who I am.
And believe in our magnificence, because that's the other thing. I was recently talking to a writer friend, and he just got a book of short stories published. And we were talking about the brutal world that is submitting your work to editors at various publishing venues. And I was asking him if when something gets rejected, how does that affect him? Because when I was doing that more, in the last few years, I haven't had to do that as much. But when I was doing that more, when I would get rejected, I didn't doubt. I didn't do the logical thing, which would be to say, well, I guess it wasn't a fit for that venue at that time, or that editor didn't want this piece for, you know, specific reasons. I immediately thought the work was crappy, right? Mm-hmm. I hope crappy's okay to say.
That's okay.
And he was saying that he doesn't do that. He doesn't doubt the quality of his work. He sometimes thinks the editor's dumb, or he thinks that, you know, maybe they just accepted a piece that was too similar and so they can't accept another one, or whatever his reasons are that are every bit as valid, probably more valid as doubting your work. And so he resends the work out. And I do think that men are better at that. Like, I think that women tend to not believe that we are magnificent. And I kind of am like of the opinion, like, let's fake it until we become it then.
Yep.
Because I think that we are probably more magnificent than we realize, but the way we're going to get magnificent is to keep doing it, right? To not lose faith in ourselves the minute we face a setback.
Yeah. I have an old saying. A lot of people say practice makes perfect. I say practice makes permanent.
I like that. Yeah.
Because perfection's impossible, right? It's impossible to achieve perfection. And yet so many women try and do that. And I go back, and I'm curious on your thought about this, because I think you've got kids as well, or you've got, you know, young girls in your life. And I go back to how I was raised. And I was raised by a very, very loving family and father and mother that taught me I could do anything I wanted to do. But somehow in my mind, that girls are still being raised to be perfectionists over risk takers. And it's actually preventing girls from getting to where they need to go. I mean, there's a whole movement of the Girls Who Code. And the woman who did the YouTube video, I don't remember her name, about Girls Who Code, says that when you watch girls who do want to go into coding, is they resist doing the final piece because it's not perfect in their mind, where a boy will put together something, and it may not be perfect, but at least it. They did, but, you know, having something done is better than being perfect, I guess is what I'm trying to say, and that we're still raising girls to be perfect.
Yeah, I don't remember where I first heard don't let perfect be the enemy of done, but I feel like I've been battling that war my whole life of letting perfect be the enemy of done. And like you, I don't know if I was raised to believe I could do anything, but I was raised by loving parents. But I do think that women and girls are bombarded with societal messages. So a parent can do so much. And then the girl has got to withstand just a barrage of stuff from our culture that demands perfection. And like when you were listing all the things that women feel like they have to be, you know, that they have to be Wonder Woman or Cinderella, they have to be all those things, smart and strong and good mothers and good workers and good managers and beautiful, you know, and size 2 and whatever else that we're getting that is getting communicated to women that I don't think is being communicated to men.
I don't think as much. In fact, I heard a UCLA study one time that said that the average child hears 29 negatives to every one positive, and some of those messages come from parents or from media or other things, and that as we grow older, we hear more of those. And so what I say to parents sometimes is that And I went through this as a kid. You know, you would come home and you'd get a B+ on a test, and your parents say, "Well, I think you should have gotten an A." Or, mm-hmm. you know, my favorite is that the child does something like maybe they make their bed or they clean their room, and a parent says something like, "You call that a clean room?"
Oh, gosh.
All of those things go into that negative column. And if you think by showering your children or the children in your life, whether they be your child or a niece or a nephew, if you think giving them compliments and telling them how beautiful and how wonderful they are is going to give them a big head, the fact is reality is the world's going to come back and say, "You're not thin enough." I mean,
yes.
there are girls that are getting not just breast augmentations and nose jobs these days. They're getting thigh surgery to create that thigh gap that a lot of the movie stars have. And it's insane.
It is insane.
We have to do something to sort of change that around. So what's the hardest thing about kind of being in this creative business and being yourself and thinking you're magnificent? What's sort of the hardest thing to deal with?
I think the hardest thing, you know, especially as relates to what we just said about believing in your own magnificence, is to keep that faith and to just realize that, you know, the spaghetti against the wall, see what sticks kind of way of doing business is how you have to approach your work. And for me, I found that, like, it's hard to not doubt my own abilities or my own worth or whether or not I made the right life choices. It's amazing how quickly I can go down a path like that when something I made and I so believe in and it doesn't sell, or, you know, I wrote it and an editor doesn't want it or whatever. It's so hard for me to keep believing in that stuff, but I've found, like what you said, practice makes permanent. I've just found that if I just keep at it, I find the path, and the path isn't always obvious, and the path is not always where I thought it would be. You know, if I told you where I thought I would be 5 years from now, in fact, I would not even tell you where I'm going to be 5 years from now, because I have no idea. It's been a very much a roller coaster ride, but it's been diligence and sort of hardening a little bit against the criticism or against the rejections, mm-hmm. and believing in yourself. And so, and oddly, I think that that's also my favorite thing. It's the hardest thing. And my favorite thing is that it is all up to me, right? It is all up to me to overcome all that stuff and keep faith in the work and keep faith in that when I align myself with my value system, that things will work out.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because I'm going through it right now. I'm working with somebody on my second and third books, and I think I have submitted more than a dozen, probably close to 20 different titles and concepts, and she'll come back or he'll come back and say, "Yeah, that's good, but I want this." And so, but here's what I'm starting. Here's what I'm doing, though, is I'm keeping a list of all of those things, all of those potential books or titles or things, and thinking, well, maybe I can write a blog about this. I mean, how could I turn that around from a no to a yes?
Smart.
You know, how could I maybe write a short little internet book that I give away for free on certain ideas? Or how could I turn that into a presentation or speech that I do in front of a group of women or girls? And so I'm trying to turn those things around to be more positive.
Yeah.
And the whole essence of your book is really discovering yourself, loving yourself, like you say, your 30-day challenge to fall in love with your playful, imaginative, colorful self, and celebrating what's really important to you. And so one of the things on day 25, I know I'm kind of skipping around the book, is decide what really matters. And there's a little visual of a truck and a sign that says "City Dump." Decide what matters and put those in the column of the things I am going to do, and decide what to take to the city dump. And it's funny, one of the things you have is the bourbon to toast watching all the stuff burn.
Oh, yeah, that was a really fun thing I did on my blog. That was inspired because I had read a New York Times piece by a woman whose apartment building burned down. And in the minutes before, there were knocks on the door, and she had a few minutes to gather up all of her things not all of her things, obviously. She had a few minutes to decide what was most important and grab it. And so did her husband, and they obviously grabbed their child. And it was interesting because the things that she grabbed were sort of emotionally important, and they meant something to her sentimentally, I guess, in the best way. And her husband grabbed like the computer and the, you know, the cell phones and the methods by which they would both continue to do their work. It was good that they had both people there to decide what matters. But it was intriguing to me because a long time ago when I was very first married, my husband and I moved from one city to the next, and we loaded all of our stuff into a U-Haul truck. Mm-hmm. And the U-Haul truck, when we got to our new place, it was after midnight, and it was a condo, and I didn't want to wake up all of our neighbors and have that be the way that we say hello when we arrive. So we left everything in the U-Haul truck, and the U-Haul truck got stolen. So
oh, yeah,
we lost literally everything that wasn't on our back, or, you know, our cat made it because our cat was inside the condo with us, but everything else was gone in an instant. And I was so intrigued when I read this story about the fire to have had a few minutes. What if I'd had a few minutes to grab mm-hmm. what I wanted off that truck? Because I didn't get those few minutes. And what would be the important things to grab if that's how long you have to decide? So I asked my blog followers to think about that and write, and in the comments section, I had them write what they would get in those last few minutes, what they thought was the most important things to get in that kind of a situation. And the answers were so wonderful. And one of them was somebody said a glass of bourbon to toast the fire that all the rest of my stuff is going up in. And then I made a big doodly post about, I illustrated all of the things that, most of the things that people had said, but they were very touching. Some were very touching things and some were very funny things. And, you know, that's what it is. Like, I think in that story, when the woman grabs a bunch of things that were emotionally important to her, and the man grabs all these things that are practical, how do we get our work done after all the rest of our stuff goes up in smoke? That's what it is. The stuff that is valuable in those situations, in that particular kind of a situation, are both things, both the practical and the emotional.
Yeah, well, it's interesting given what's going on right now with people that are impacted by the, you know, the floods and the hurricanes and things that are happening in Florida and Houston and, you know, Mexico City and all these Puerto Rico, all these things and things about, you know, what would you really grab if you only had a few minutes to grab the things that are important to you? And my husband and I have moved. We've been married for 34 years. We've moved 15 times in 34 years, including a move overseas where we literally took almost nothing with us except our computers and a few personal things and photos we kept in storage in Seattle when we moved from Seattle to Singapore for Microsoft. And we didn't miss many of those things. The things that we got rid of, the things we didn't care about, and we keep downsizing and downsizing. Every time we do, we make a list of even household things that are important to us. So we're almost up in time, and I can't believe it. This has been such an incredible conversation. I do want to ask you one thing, and then be sure that you spell your name for us so that we know how to spell everything in your name. But if you were to give a couple of words of advice for women to really go kick some glass, what would you tell women in our audience to go kick some glass?
I would say to try to develop a practice of paying mindful attention to yourself for, I think 15 minutes a day is just fine. If you, for 15 minutes a day, devote time to yourself in whatever fills your well, you know, in whatever way, without apology, whatever way makes you feel fulfilled for that 15 minutes, I think that would go such a long way to making, to affecting women in all aspects of their lives and making them feel stronger and more grounded and more able to withstand all that the world has going against women in general. I just feel like we undervalue self-love, and it is so important and so easy to do.
Yeah. And I always tell people, control your own destiny, and why would you give that power to anybody else? So control who you are and be awesome. Just be your awesome self all the time.
Yeah.
You know, be your playful, awesome, imaginative self. Celebrate your successes and celebrate things that don't grow so well and figure out how you move on from that. So just one last minute, the title of your book, and then how do we spell your name? And I have a few closing comments, and then we will sign out shortly. So how do we get in touch with you? And one more time, your book.
Okay, the book's name is Find Your Awesome, a 30-day challenge to fall in love with your playful, imaginative, and colorful self. And my name is Judy Clement Walls. That's JudyClementWall.com.
Awesome. Well, like I said, I was going to use this word awesome 100 times. You have been a fabulous guest. I can't wait to stay connected with you. This is Patty Grimm with Women Kicking Glass. You can get in touch with me at pattygrimm@live.com, and that's PattyGrimm. We are looking for folks that, if you're interested in sponsoring the show and being able to continue the show on the air, please contact me at pattygrimm@live.com. Also, I have my book, Women Kicking Glass, Ways to Be an Empowered Woman Leader, that's on Amazon. And if you'd like to book me for a speech or a webinar or speak to one of your groups or young women's groups, I'm more than willing to do that. And you can even call me at 425-289-6619. Thanks, everybody, and I hope everyone has a kicking day. And let's go out there and really make a difference in the world by being awesome.
Thanks for listening to Women Kicking Glass, the only radio show on OC Talk Radio dedicated to empowering women to be the best they can be. Listen each week or download the podcast at patty.grimm.podbean.com. To reach out to Patty to schedule a speech webinar or to learn more about her leadership and team training, contact Patty at pattygrimm@live.com. For more information about her company and her books. Have a kicking day.